Let's get to our guest, Moby.
Yeah, hi, how are you?
Hi, how are you? Thanks for joining
good.
Me today.
Oh,
I don't really feel like I have to say much about you. Most people that go by a first name only, people are pretty familiar with. And certainly your talents and music over the decades have touched so many in a very positive way. But what I want to talk about in these few minutes is the book Gristle, and also about vegetarian diets and how important they are, because this show is all about food.
Okay, great.
Okay, so you became a vegetarian at 19.
Yeah.
Or so which, I read.
Yeah, which was, 25 years ago.
A little while ago, and then vegan sometime after that.
Yeah, I guess I've been vegan for about 22 years.
Yeah,
and,
good for you.
As a vegan, I've had periods of like truly annoying vegan militancy.
Yes.
And periods where I basically like my veganism wasn't necessarily making the world a better place. It was just irritating my friends. and so I'm still a vegan now, but I guess hopefully a much less annoying vegan than I used to be.
Well, you know, that's interesting. I think a lot of us go through that, especially as we age, we become more accepting. And as we realize that that militant attitude really isn't something that's going to change people.
Well, in some ways, ironically, I found that when I was at my most militant, I changed people, but I changed people into even having a dimmer view of animal rights and veganism.
Right.
And I sort of then tried to think of it. When I was 17 years old in high school, I was a militant carnivore. I only ate at Burger King and McDonald's, and I had nothing but ridicule and disdain for vegans. And I realized when I was 17, if someone had come to me and tried to, in a very didactic way, convert me to the cause of veganism, I would have just ridiculed them. And so I realize now the best way for me to talk about my beliefs with people is just to communicate in as sort of like as respectful a way as possible.
I like that. My partner, Gary, who's vegan now, was somewhat of a militant carnivore. He says that he alone was responsible for global warming with the amount of meat that he's eating. but, yeah, it's interesting. Now, did you have some – were you influenced by certain people or certain things that you read?
I guess I hope this doesn't sound too pithy, but I was most influenced by my cat when I was growing up. And I had this simple sort of realization when I was about 18 years old. I was petting my cat, whose name was Tucker, and I realized that, I love Tucker more than I love most people on the planet, and I would never want to be in any way involved in any action that would cause suffering to Tucker. So then by extrapolation, I realized I shouldn't be involved in any process that caused suffering for other animals. So if I had to point to, like, a genesis of my animal rights interest, it was hanging out when I was 18 years old with my cat, Tucker.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Tucker.
Yeah.
But, there's so much that we can learn from animals, and so many people take that for granted.
Yeah, I mean, animals, I mean, I grew up around the strangest assortment of animals. I mean, when I was growing up, we had iguanas and mice and rats and cats and dogs and goats and just, chickens, creatures everywhere. And far be it for me to be too critical of an industry, but it seems like the meat industry, one of their goals is to sort of get people to not pay too much attention to the fact that what they're buying in the supermarket at one point was a living, breathing, sentient creature.
Yeah, they're really good at that.
That's one of the ideas behind the book Gristle, isn't necessarily to convert people to veganism, but really just to talk about the consequences of factory farming and industrialized animal production.
Yeah, I love the way that you did that, because you have a number of different authors in here and that touch on different subjects. I want to get to some of them, but it's really a very all-inclusive range. You have some pig farmers that write in the book.
Yeah. The people who own Nyman Pork Ranch wrote our chapter on communities. So if ever anyone accuses it of being a vegan book, I don't know how a vegan book can have a pig farmer as a contributor.
Now, how did were you the one who selected these writers, or how did they get chosen to participate in this
book?
Well,
my friend Mian Park and I sort of came up with the book, the idea for the book, quite about 5 or 6 years ago, and we came up with a wish list of different possible contributors. And so when it came time to actually make the book, we approached our wish list of contributors, and for the most part, everybody we wanted was willing to do it.
I wouldn't see why they wouldn't be, because everyone here pretty much, we're all on the same page where we want to get this planet to a better place, a healthier environment, healthier people, and less pain and suffering. So any opportunity to do that, yes.
Yeah, and people, yeah, people were really responsive when we asked them. And again, as I said, the goal of the book, even though I'm a vegan and me and the other person with whom I made the book is a vegan, you know, it's a book for meat eaters, it's a book for vegetarians, it's a book for anybody who's concerned about the consequences of factory farming and industrialized animal production.
Right. So what's really great is you've covered a wide range of information in, and it's a teeny book. If you don't mind me using the word teeny, it's 140 pages, and it's small and easy to carry. What I like about it is that, you know, I live in New York City, and I'm on the subway quite frequently. This is a great subway read. You can read one chapter at a time and move on.
Well, that's the thing, because there's nothing in the book that's all that proprietary. You know, almost all the information in the book is available in other places, but it's usually available in more like academic papers and sources that are fairly dry. And so we thought we would compile it all in one place in a very, and it's a very bad pun, but in a more digestible way. So that, well, you know, someone can get really involved in the information, or they can just open it up and flip through it and look at some of the charts and the graphs. So it's hopefully a more sort of like reader-friendly book than some of the more academic papers we drew from.
It is reader-friendly, but it certainly is packed. You know, some of these articles are just bang, 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 because what's going on is horrible.
It's hard not to be too didactic when I talk about some, or at least sound didactic, because some of this information, the information itself, just to talk about it, is so horrifying. Especially the... the part that seems to affect a lot of people is the part about climate change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where 25% of climate change is a result of animal production. And the UN, I believe just last week, actually the UN released a report advocating a vegetarian or a vegan diet to stave off environmental disaster.
Right, you know, I was talking about it earlier in the show.
Yeah, basically saying that, like, anyone who's concerned with the environment has to very seriously think about, you know, not just the car they drive and the light bulbs they use, but also, you know, the way they eat.
I don't even think, if people aren't thinking about it, it's definitely going to be where we have to go if we're going to support a planet of 9 million people in 2050.
Yeah, it seems that way. Like, I mean, basically, we're burning through all these resources, and we're polluting our water supply and devastating our communities, so that we can produce a product that ultimately decimates and destroys the end user. You know, that's the terrible irony of industrial animal production is it's heavily subsidized by our tax dollars. The factory farms and the processing plants completely ruin communities, and the people who end up buying the product are made sick by it. So it's really, I just can't see much good in factory farming and industrial food production.
In this book, which I highly recommend people picking up, it's a great stocking stuff for Christmas time because it'll fit in the stocking.
Mm-hmm. might not be the most fun, lighthearted Christmas read, but yeah.
Well, I'm going to pick out the positive points of the book first,
okay.
And that is, this is the thing that I'm always trying to do, that it's a joyful, wonderful thing to eat plants. It makes you look great, you age slower, you have energy. And so the first chapter is on health, and you've got Brendan Brazier. I've had him on the show. I love him. He's just a sweet guy, and he's a phenomenal athlete. And he talks about having superior athletic performance on a diet of fruits and vegetables.
Yeah, I mean, I know quite a lot of athletes, and boxers, and I mean, some of my, I used to study Muay Thai, like MMA kickboxing, and one of my teachers was a vegan, and he, as far as I know, he's an undefeated Muay Thai fighter, and he's vegan. He doesn't really advertise it, but I mean, it definitely. Yeah, I mean, you just look at study after study, and you look at all the health, the deleterious health consequences of eating animal products, and it does seem like, for the most part, people would be well advised to at least partially shift over to a more sort of like plant-based diet.
Well, here's what I think, and maybe you can tell me if you agree, because you're in a celebrity kind of environment. I think people respond most to what's going to make them look good.
Oh, yeah. Without question. I mean, like, there are some people who can respond out of a sense of altruism or out of a sense of compassion for animals. But, I mean, at the end of the day, we all want to look good. We all want to be healthy. We all want to be, you know, thin and fit and look great. And I think people are slowly realizing that what you put inside your body eventually affects how you look. You know,
and I think that's the best way to promote this personally. Maybe by not being militant about it, but by just being the best that you can. And then people say, what are you doing? You're radiating. You look so young. You look so great. What's your secret?
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I was actually thinking about at some point putting out a book or a website where it's just basically portraits of vegans. Because a lot of people think of vegans as being, like, sick and scrawny and sad-looking. And a lot of the vegans I know, you know,
are
basically
hot.
Yeah, I mean, they're in really great shape, and their skin is great, and every, you know, and so I do think that certainly in our culture, appealing to people's vanity is probably the best way to promote something.
Well, if you want to do it, I can't tell you what to do, but I highly encourage you to follow your instinct, because fortunately you're in a position where people are going to at least hear what you have to say.
Well, it's funny, if you look at it, the most successful vegan book of all time is Roy Friedman's Skinny Bitch.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a book about, you know, animal rights. It's a book about vanity.
Right.
And I do think it is sort of telling of our culture. And Roy's a good friend of mine. I really appreciate the work that she does. But it is very telling of our culture that the most successful animal rights, animal welfare book of all time is a book that does appeal to people's vanity.
Yeah. Oh, well.
I'm just as guilty of it as everybody else.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, given a choice between looking, you know, healthy and fit and having a sort of radiant glow or being obese and sick, I mean, everyone wants to look healthy and fit.
Absolutely. And it's so easy to do. Before you go, you have an opportunity to go all around the world and eat everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? Where do you like to go? What do you like to eat?
Well, boy, we could talk for the next hour about that. But
that's fine with me. That's all I like to talk about is food.
I mean, there's so many. What I love, I mean, there are places where you expect the food to be good, and the food is good. You know, like if you're in Los Angeles or Toronto or Vancouver, Sydney, Australia, you know, you sort of expect high-quality food, and more often than not, it is good quality food. But every now and then, I'm completely surprised. Like, some of the best vegan food I ever had is in Lisbon, Portugal.
Mm.
Wow. And one of the best restaurants I ever went to, also for vegan food, was in Warsaw in Poland.
Wow, really?
Yeah, no, really, because Eastern Europe is quite difficult. You know, being a vegan in Eastern Europe isn't that easy, but every now and then you stumble across, you know, a little restaurant where the food's really, you know, homemade, passionately prepared, and it's just great and surprising.
Well, I'm going to run to Poland now. I didn't know
It might not be open anymore, and I don't remember what it was actually called, but yeah.
Okay, that's fine. And do you have a favorite dish?
Let me think. I have to say, at Real Food Daily in Los Angeles, they have they have the vegan tacos there. They're pretty great.
Great. Well, Moby, thank you so much. I love what you're doing, love your music, love who you are. Just keep doing more of it.
Well, thank you very much. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Okay, thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.